Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. So we're going to start with this book that my family gave me when I turned 80, 80 Things to Do When You Turn 80. And the one I'm going to share with you today is called On Turning 80. Now, it seems that some of these are repetitive, but we can all be reminded of these things from time to time. This one is by Elizabeth Grace, who is a retired clinical social worker. On a certain day in April 2014, I was still 79 years old. A look at the calendar confirmed that the very next day I would turn 80. It seemed kind of exciting. A new decade, a nice round number, divisible by four, a neat and tidy figure. Thinking about it even gave me a slight sense of achievement. Not everyone is lucky enough to arrive safely at that destination, and I was active in many fields, healthy and, for the most part, comfortable with my station in life. Of course, I had suffered my share of losses, my life partner, family members, and beloved friends, animal companions, several teeth, and most of my hearing. I had weathered the C's and M's of late middle age, the cataract surgeries and colonoscopies, the medical choices and memory lapses. I slept less and read more. Some of the A's of old age might lie in wait for me, arthritis and the grim prospect of Alzheimer's. But I nevertheless felt very fortunate. I remembered with a smug smile the gloomy remark of an acquaintance 20 years before. It's all downhill after 60. Not so. I'd thought then, and I said it to myself again on the 364th day of my 80th year. I had gone online a few weeks before wondering who else might share my birth year and made a list of the celebrities who had already turned or were about to turn 80. I was pleased to share a 2014 anniversary with Judi Dench, Bill Moyers, Alan Bennett, Barry Humphries, Madher Jaffrey, Marilyn Horne, Gloria Steinem, Shirley MacLaine, and others whose names were less familiar to me. I was particularly happy that my compatriot Jane Goodall would have her 80th birthday a couple of weeks before mine, and I had even sent her online greetings like hundreds, perhaps thousands, of her other admirers. To join such impressive list of active octogenarians made my imminent move into another decade seem challenging rather than troubling. A few more hours passed on the day in question, and suddenly I was 80. I was on vacation in New Mexico, which somehow added to the feeling of unreality I experienced. I awoke in my room in the Santa Fe Inn, dressed, and went down to breakfast to be serenaded with a round of happy birthdays, spoken and sung, a greeting that would be repeated throughout the day. Never comfortable with being the center of attention, I filled my plate, poured myself some coffee, and slunk into my seat, glad when conversation turned to the group's plans for the day. Since that day at the end of April, I have had time to reflect on what it feels like to be 80 and have observed that I now view that milestone a little differently. How could the passage of 24 hours have changed my perception, and will I recover my 79-year-old's optimism? I remember how often in the past, while canceling a plan or ruling out a possibility, I have thought or said, "There's always next year." Now I feel inclined to add, "I hope," when I postpone something. How many more next years will I have? A few weeks into my 80-year-old life, I sat on the porch steps at dusk, as I have done many times each spring, watching for the bats, which arrive almost without fail as the sky pales. They crisscross the space high above my head, hawking for insects. I was reassured when two appeared, the onslaught of the fatal white nose syndrome having decimated bat colonies across much of the United States. I count on the constancy of certain things, like the nightly arrival of the bats, while noting that many things in my environment have changed. There is a spruce tree close to the house that must be cut down soon, having grown from 12 feet tall to a threatening 35 feet over the past 40 years. The house itself now stands centered in an amphitheater of tall trees. Even 20 years ago, we could look westward over their crowns and across the valley to fields full of grazing cows. Now the view, the cows, and the farm itself are gone. Of course, the changes did not occur all at once, but at a rate so reassuringly slow that I only gradually became aware of them. A year or two ago, considering a move, I caught myself thinking, how could I leave this house and give up my view? I had to laugh at myself as I acknowledged that my view no longer exists, stolen by those ever-growing trees. Around the same time that I sat watching for the bats' return, I came across an article about a British study. 2,000 residents of the United Kingdom over the age of 40 were asked what they considered old. The average answer was 80, an advance on the age of 68 suggested by previous generations. The respondents were influenced by active lifestyle of older people, the fact that many delay retirement, and even by familiarity with happily working and playing octogenarians. Just as I did, many people noted names of celebrities who had celebrated their 80th birthdays and saw that for them, as for the population in general, it no longer made sense to link old age to retirement. 93% of the people surveyed said, "You're only as old as you feel." And 82% said that they themselves felt, on average, 11 years younger than their chronological age. I've taken questionnaires that distinguish between chronological age and real age, measured in terms of both physical and psychological health. I imagine that the 82% in the survey, a whopping 1,640 respondents, reflected that distinction. So I must and will come to terms with being 80. I will relish the things I enjoy doing just as much as I did at 69 or 79, but accept that there are some things I will decide not to do. I will accept that my physical strength has decreased, but take comfort from the fact that my trust in my own judgment is enhanced by years of experience. I will not beat myself up when I notice that I have become less confident in tackling new things, driving unfamiliar routes. I will allow myself to take time in making major decisions and to claim the right to change my mind and say no. I will try to cultivate, in the words of the Serenity Prayer, the wisdom to know the difference between the things I can change and the things I can't. Some of the things I can change are adaptations that have made my home safer and more convenient, a handrail alongside some steep stone steps, a new garage door with an automatic opener, another handrail, this one in the shower stall. The biggest practical concession to my increasing years was the one I had the most difficult making. A friend, still partnered but aware of my single status, had long urged me to buy some kind of device to wear in case of an accident, one that might necessitate my calling out in those well-worn words, "I've fallen and I can't get up." I argued with my friend, I argued with myself. But eventually I saw the wisdom of that piece of advice and, after reading an advertisement in the AARP bulletin, made the necessary phone call. The product I selected was one called Splash, marketed by Great Call. Not only does it operate when wet, hence the catchy name, but it will work in any part of the United States and has a built-in GPS system. If I get stuck in the bathtub at home, as a friend of mine once did, or trip and break a bone while hiking somewhere, I can, with the push of a button, notify the company of both my plight and my location. Only days after I placed my order, UPS deposited a small package beside the handsome, new, lightweight, automatic, opener-equipped door to my basement garage. Now I just have to keep it charged and remember to wear it. I did not like the fact that the average answer given by those 2,000 Brits was that 80 equals old. I preferred the opinion of the 1 in 5 who said that you might be considered old when you reached 90. I'll drink to that. And at least for now, it won't be from a can of Ensure. And now let's go back to the Mayo Clinic magazine, Understanding Alzheimer's, Your Guide to Brain Health. We just started this last week, and we're still talking about exactly what is the brain and what does it do for us. Your brain and typical aging. As with other parts of your body, the brain also undergoes changes with age. Weighing in at about 3 pounds, your brain is the most complex organ in your body, a master computer that controls actions requiring thought, such as balancing your checkbook. It also manages actions you don't think about, such as swallowing food or blinking your eyes. When it's healthy, your brain keeps track of all your body functions and actions. It stores your instincts and memories. It allows you to make decisions and be creative. It organizes and shapes emotions. And maybe, most miraculously, the brain allows you to do all of these things simultaneously. Consider something as simple as reading. As you take in the meaning of each word, you're also likely holding a book or tablet upright, adjusting its distance from your eyes, and turning pages when you need to. You're studying what you read, recalling information you already know, and responding emotionally to the text. At the same time, you're probably processing sounds and sensations from the environment around you. You might be doing other things at the same time, too, such as keeping an eye on the clock or sipping coffee from a cup. Your brain controls all of these actions, and while all of this is happening, your brain is managing vital functions that aren't directly related to what you're doing at the moment. It's making sure that you're breathing, digesting food, and doing other things necessary for life. Your brain and memory. Your brain allows you to remember past experiences, events or circumstances, and to create new memories. For this to happen, specific brain structures must work in concert. The term brain network refers to different parts of the brain working together to perform cognitive functions, such as thinking, learning, and remembering. Those parts linked most closely to memory are the cerebrum and the limbic systems. The cerebrum is the section of the brain people are generally the most familiar with. It rests on top of the brainstem and makes up the largest portion of the brain. A deep groove separates the cerebrum into left and right hemispheres, connected by a thick band of fibers called the corpus callosum. Each hemisphere has 4 lobes, and each lobe is responsible for different functions. The temporal lobe, for example, is vital to memory. It sits at the side of your forehead near your temple. The limbic system is a network of small structures located inside the brain that deal with emotions and memory. The limbic system is where you'll find the hippocampus, the central switchboard for your memory system. The hippocampus sorts pieces of information, stores them in different parts of your brain, and recalls them when you need them. It also moves information between your recent and remote memory. The hippocampus helps you recall everything from where you put your car keys this morning to where you stayed on your honeymoon. In a healthy brain, all of these structures work together efficiently. They're protected by your skull and cushioned by layers of membrane. A network of blood vessels helps your brain survive and function. Cognitive changes with typical aging. With age, many people begin to notice subtle changes in how well they remember, learn, and make decisions. Their minds may not seem as nimble and sharp as they once were. Such changes develop gradually and inconsistently in people in their 50s and 60s. While you may find it unsettling to know that these changes can happen, the reality may be a little less foreboding than you think. As you get older, the number of neurons in your brain decreases. Neurons are specialized brain cells that transmit information. Fewer neurons mean less communication between your brain and the rest of your body. Over time, your brain may shrink in size, atrophy. Fortunately, with billions of neurons and trillions of connections between them, your brain's cognitive capacity far exceeds what you will probably ever need in your lifetime. Even better, living neurons continue to make new connections, replacing at least some of the ones that are lost. Nevertheless, gradual neuron loss often has an effect on how well you think and learn to some extent. You may also notice changes in certain tasks and functions. How quickly you can process information and provide a response, such as moving your hand from a hot stove or providing an answer to a question, typically slows down with age. According to some estimates, an older adult's response time is about 1.5 times slower than that of younger adults. This means you may need more time to solve a complex problem in your 60s than you did in your 30s, for example. Or you may need a little more time and a little bit more instruction to master new skills. But when given enough time, older adults generally are able to come up with accurate, effective solutions that are equal to those of younger adults. Memory. Memory is a broad term that describes the ability to remember information. With typical aging, older Americans are generally good at retaining information and memories that they have previously acquired, such as details about a family wedding or a child's graduation party. It may just take longer to retrieve that information. The ability to perform well-learned procedures, such as riding a bike, also remains stable with age. This is an example of procedural memory, which you'll learn about more later on. Where older adults most often notice changes is in working memory. Working memory refers to the ability to temporarily hold on to information, such as hearing a new phone number and then remembering it long enough to dial it. With age, recent memory and the formation of new memories become more vulnerable. Attention is the ability to focus on something in order to process information. Simple, focused attention, such as watching and paying attention to a TV program, tends to be preserved in older age. However, it may become more difficult to do things that divide your attention, such as watching TV while talking on the phone. The brain can process only so much information at one time. Aging doesn't seem to affect the ability to focus on simple tasks, but with more complex tasks, it can become easier to lose focus. Language skills describe how well you can understand and use language, whether it's written or spoken. With typical aging, older adults retain their vocabulary and their ability to understand written language. Understanding speech may get more difficult, especially in someone with hearing problems. However, you may find that it takes more time to find or retrieve a word, and spelling familiar words may become more difficult. But this may be reversible. Using a rich vocabulary and saying what you mean can actually improve with each passing year. So we're going to pause for now and take this up again at our next session. And now, how about a little more information about Kurt Douglas? From the article in AARP magazine, Looking Back, Looking Forward. So today we're going to talk about the actor, the dad, and the future. The actor. Question. Your first serious TV gig was The Streets of San Francisco in 1972. We shot 26 episodes a season, filmed 6 days a week. It made me appreciate how hard my dad worked. His work ethic. It was also the hardest job for me because somebody who was really shy, who used to look at the camera like an X-ray machine in the dentist's office. You were mentored by your co-star, the incredible Carl Malden. Those days, when you were the second banana on a police show, usually you were a step or two behind the lead because the focus couldn't hold both actors. Carl was the first guy who said to me, "Come on up." He shared the spotlight, cared about others, said I was the son he never had. A good mentor can save you a lot of pain. What was your favorite film or role? I hate to say it, but I've rarely seen any of my pictures more than once. At the premiere, I just go through the red carpet and then out the back door. I love the process of making films, but I don't dwell. When I've had a good part or a good scene, it's usually based on the writing and the directing. For your collaborators and co-stars, you often choose strong women. My mother was an actress. I spent a lot of time with her backstage at the theater, so I've never been threatened by formidable women. I'm proud that for nearly every woman I've worked with, it's been one of her best roles. Kathleen Turner, Genevieve Bujold, way back in Coma, Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, Annette Bening, Sharon Stone. I try to make the environment as comfortable as possible, giving them respect and protection. The Kominsky Method is my fourth time working with Kathleen, and there is a wonderful comfort in that. The Dad. You have three children, Cameron, 42, from your marriage to Deandra Luker, Dylan, 20, and Karis, 17, with your current wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones. What surprised you most about being a father? How much of an effort it is. You have to learn patience. We actors tend to be a little narcissistic. I'm now the proud grandfather of two grandchildren, 3-year-old Lua and 3-month-old Ryder, from my older son, Cameron. He makes me laugh when I watch him with his kids. He and I had our issues when he was growing up, and it's like, oh, now you see what it's like to be a parent. You told this magazine not that long ago that you winced when you thought about being in your 70s and unable to chase the boys away from your teenage daughter. Well, she's got a steady boyfriend now, who I like. Karis has a great moral compass and a good sense of humor. She sticks to her own rhythm. She and her brother Dylan are good students. I have no idea where that comes from. Catherine doesn't either. But we're very grateful, as he laughs. What do you most want your kids and grandkids to learn from you? A work ethic, courtesy to your fellow human beings, and kindness, which are traits you have to work at and rehearse, particularly compassion. I feel a certain responsibility to conduct myself as somebody who has been blessed and fortunate simply because I was born a white male, and also to teach them to be good citizens of the planet. I'm conscious of us all being together in this. What's the hardest thing you've had to do as a parent? Set boundaries, big and small. My older son Cameron was a drug addict and ended up serving 7.5 years in federal prison. That was hard, having to protect myself and family and tell my older son that if you feel like I'm pulling away from you, I am, because I'm afraid you're either going to kill yourself or kill somebody else. That experience with Cameron, I don't wish on anyone. So many families go through issues with addiction. There's a toughness that's required, but when you reach that point, you're doing it for your child. The future. What are your feelings about growing older? During this COVID-19 period, doing much more couch potatoing, I have been shocked by the reduction of my stamina, and my long-term memory is fine, but my short-term memory is not. I used to blame it on pot, but I've got some friends who've been smoking as long as I have and have fabulous memories, so I don't think that's the issue. I'm researching it. Let me know what you find out. Have you become the person you expected you would be? I wasn't expecting much, so I don't know. I love my work. It's been good to me. I dwell on that versus my failures in relationships or other things I can't control. I've weathered a lot of crises, but you go through life and inside you feel like this kid that you always were. There is part of me in my 70s that still feels like the teenager I was back then. When you're a jet all the way? Right. What are you most proud of? A good batting average in what I do. I'm not necessarily a home run hitter, but I've got a good batting average. And finally, do you think you'll ever slow down and stop working? No. Work keeps you going, keeps you sharp. Of course, these days I'm looking around the set like, I'm the oldest person here, man. Where did time go? But I love the whole process. We're not doing brain surgery. We're showbiz. A boundary I do set is no a-holes. I don't work with a-holes. I've got no time for that. And this article was as told to Allison Glock, who is a senior writer and producer for ESPN and a contributing editor for Garden and Gun. And now we have a time for a few more items from my friend in Canada. Guess we'll have to come back in person to see if this forecast comes true. All of the following will likely become reality in the next 10 to 20 years. Many of us won't see the changes, but our kids and grandkids probably will. So moving on, artificial intelligence. Computers become exponentially better in understanding the world. This year, a computer beat the best Go player in the world, 10 years earlier than expected. In the USA, young lawyers already don't get jobs because of computers. You can get legal advice, so far for right now, the basic stuff, within seconds with 90% accuracy, compared with 70% when done by humans. So if you study law, stop immediately. There will be 90% fewer lawyers in the future. What a thought. Only omniscient specialists will remain. Computer programs already help nurses diagnosing cancer, and the programs are 4 times more accurate than human nurses. Facebook now has pattern recognition software that can recognize faces better than humans. In 2013, computers will become more intelligent than humans. Computers can be unplugged or shot. Autonomous cars. In 2018, the first self-driving cars are already here. In the next 2 years, the entire industry will start to be disrupted. You won't want to own a car anymore, as you will call a car with your phone. It will show up at your location and drive you to your destination. You will not need to park it. You will pay only for the driven distance, and you can be productive while driving. The very young children of today will never get a driver's license and will never own a car. This will change our cities because we will need 90 to 95 fewer cars. We can transform farmer parking lots into green parks. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.